May 17th, 2015, in Plainfield, New Jersey. Hare Krishna. So today we're going to be looking at one of the most important sections in the Bhagavad Gita. This is chapter 12, verses 13 through 20. These are the qualities of the devotee who has attained peace. And these are also the qualities that make us very dear to Krishna. So many times people ask, how do I know whether or not Krishna is pleased with me? Because this is our main goal, is that everything we do should be to please Krishna, correct? We will say, how do I know that Krishna is pleased? So this is how we know. But not only that, but we know that the perfection, what is the perfection? What is the essence of bhakti? To always what? To always remember Krishna and never forget him. Okay, but this is not so easy, is it? Is it so easy to fix your mind on Krishna? No. Okay, so by developing these qualities of peace, we please Krishna and we develop the ability to fix our minds on Krishna. What do you think? Is that good? Okay. What is the qualification that I can fix my mind? This is the qualification. So this presentation is from, of course, Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, and we also are looking at the commentaries, particularly Valadeva Vidbhushana and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So how do we say that these are the qualities of peace? Of course, this relates to the previous verse where Krishna is saying that the end of giving up karma palatyaga, the anantaram, is shanti. One gets shanti or peace as a result of giving up the results of one's actions. So these are the qualities then, this is a description of the qualities of those who have attained this peace. So this peace is attained in one of two ways. It's attained either by following the process of bhakti yoga, or it can be attained through going through the yoga ladder, doing karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga, and then realizing atma and paramatma. So we're not going to discuss much of the yoga ladder tonight. And by doing either of these, one gets the qualities that give one peace. And Srila Prabhupada says in this purport to 13.14 that these qualities enable us to fix our mind on Krishna. And he says these are undoubtedly very rare. That doesn't mean rare among the devotees. It means rare in general. Just like in the Bhagavad Gita chapter 7, text 3. What did Krishna say in 7.3? Do you know? Anybody know? Manushyanam sahasreshu kashchit yatati seva. You know this verse? You can say it together. Manushyanam sahasreshu kashchit yatati siddhaya yatitam api siddhanam kashchit mam veti tapta. Very nice. You know better than half the adults in the room. So among many thousands of people, one looks for perfection. This is our experience, yes, in the world. Most of the people in the world, they go to work, they make money, they spend their money, they sleep, they eat. Yes? They watch the football game. They don't think about what is the purpose of life very often. So most people are like that. Out of many thousands, one person is asking, what is the purpose of life? Who am I? And out of all those who ask, one actually endeavors to find truth. So this is what we mean by rare. We don't mean among those who are on the path of enlightenment that it is rare. We mean in general among the persons. So these qualities allow us to get peace. Now, earlier in this chapter, Krishna talks about the perfection of bhakti, where we love God, we are absorbed in love of God. He says if you can't do that, you do what Krishna calls in this chapter, abhyas yoga. Abhyas means practice or repetition. We usually call this sadhana bhakti in our Hare Krishna movement. A way of practicing yoga. So how does one go from the externals of bhakti? These qualities of peace are very important, because first one takes up bhakti yoga, one may be doing the practices just with the body. You're chanting with the mouth, but not so much with the mind. You're offering arati to the deities without meditation. It's very external. You understand what I'm saying? This Krishna calls Krishna Karmani, just working for the Lord. But abhyas yoga, sadhana bhakti, begins, anybody know what Rupa Goswami, Srila Prabhupada say? The beginning of sadhana bhakti is what? Anushraddha is not the beginning of sadhana bhakti. The practice of sadhana bhakti begins in bhajana kriya, not in anushraddha. How do you start? That's one of the processes. But how do you start? You have to have some love for Krishna, yes. You have to have some taste. And it begins with always thinking of Krishna. That is the beginning. This is Nectar of Devotion, Chapter 2. Sadhana Bhakti, the practice of Bhakti Yoga. How do you know it's Bhakti Yoga and not something else? It's Bhakti Yoga when you are making an effort to absorb your mind in meditation on the Supreme. That is the definition. Am I boring all of the youth? That they're all getting up and leaving? Why are they all... Oh, this class is boring for them? Such old children, and they are bored by this class? Hare Krishna. Was this class boring for the teenagers? During this class? Such older children? Hare Krishna. Not good. Okay, so the beginning of Bhakti Yoga is when you are making an effort to think about Krishna. Otherwise, it is not Bhakti Yoga. It is just Krishna Karmani or Agyata Sukriti. So if one is just doing the activities of Bhakti externally, just with the body, that is not Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga begins when you make an effort to involve the mind. Therefore, we call it devotional service. Srila Prabhupada uses this word, devotional service. Not just service, but service with devotion. But often in the beginning, a person is just doing things externally. Do you follow? Almost like ritualistically. Because fixing the mind on Krishna is difficult for the conditioned soul. So how does one get from just following externally to following deeply? People ask this all the time. How do I chant Hare Krishna with real attention? How do I have good quality of chanting? So it is these qualities of peace that is the bridge from just ritualistic external following to the actual beginning of bhakti yoga. So what is the relationship between all these qualities that we're going to look at and peace? What do they have to do with peace? So if we think about this, so I think that most of us, maybe all of us, we have an ideal self that we would like to be. Just like we are all honest here, but anybody going to say I'm 100% honest all the time? No. Or I'm sure we are kind people. We're not cruel people, but would we say I'm kind in all circumstances? I'm always kind. So this is a problem, because we would like to always be authentic. We would like to always be kind, isn't it? Yes? So I think of it like we have this ideal self up in the sky. And then we have the self that we deal with regularly. You know? And how do I get from here to there? How do we have good qualities in all circumstances? So if you think about it, what is it that tips us into bad qualities? So I'm sure it was a very long time ago. This may be difficult, but if you can think of the last time you were dishonest or unkind, hopefully that was many years ago. But anyway, if you can think of the last time, you'll understand there was some fear. With some fear that we think, if I'm honest in this circumstance, I will suffer in some way. If I'm honest, or, you know, then people won't like me, I won't get something, so I cannot be completely honest. There is some fear, and there is some fear of self-preservation. So it's fear that tips us, it's like knocks us over into doing something that we don't really want to do. Now it's interesting that when Arjuna asked this question of Krishna in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, what is it that seems to force us against our will into acting in ways that we don't want to act? And what was Krishna's answer? It's what? It's lust. So why am I saying it's fear? Krishna talks about attachment, fear, and anger. What are we afraid of? We are afraid that our desires will not be fulfilled. That is our fear. Therefore, it is lust. I'm thinking, I have this desire that must be fulfilled. It must be. If this desire is not fulfilled, then I will really suffer in some way. Everybody understand this logic? There's something I'm attached to. I have to get it. If I don't get it, I will suffer. And therefore, when this great material desire is threatened, I become fearful. And in that fear, I then do something that is against my own principles and my own ideals. So therefore, if I had complete peace, complete faith, complete courage, that everything I need is always going to be there, that all of my needs are taken care of, then I would never become fearful, and I would never jettison my own ideals. Can you all follow this logic? Yes? Okay? Just like if a person is afraid, if I am truthful in this situation, I will lose my money and I will be poor. Therefore, in this situation, I cannot act so honestly. However, if you knew you had an unlimited source of money no matter what happened, would you ever have to be dishonest worrying about money? No. Clear? Clear to everybody? Okay. So it is this fear that something I need is going to be threatened. And this idea of something I need is based upon lust. Not just sexual lust. Lust we often think of just sexual. But just the desire to enjoy the things of the world. The concept that things external to me are necessary for my happiness. By the way, external to me doesn't just mean my phone, my car, my house. It also means my own body and mind. Okay? Because my own body and mind are also external to me. We are spiritual beings who are struggling with the body and the mind. With the body and the senses and the mind. But this is not us. So our illusion is I need something from the body, from the mind, from other living entities, and from nature, from things, in order to be happy. This is an illusion. And it is a lust thinking that I have to have these things to be happy. Therefore, when they are threatened enough, I act improperly. If one has peace, then I am a spiritual being, and all of my needs are already there. Krishna nicely explains this in Bhagavad Gita 2:45, where he says, Nir yoga kshema atmavan. You give up all desires for gain and safety, and you be firmly established in the atma, in the self. How do you do this? As he says in 9:22, yoga kshema vahamyaham. Nir yoga kshema atmavan, yoga kshema vahamyaham. Don't worry about these things, be established in the self, because I am providing them, Krishna said. That doesn't mean that Krishna is going to provide necessarily all the money that you want. They say, the research shows that no matter how much money anyone has, they always want 10% more. So, not like that. But if you think about why do we want money? Why do we want money? For security, yes? That's what they call them, securities. You get securities. We want money for pleasure, for happiness. Maybe you want money for status, for comfort. But if you already had security, and you already had pleasure, and you already had status, and you already had comfort, maybe for power, if you already had those things, would you need money? No. Okay, so when Krishna says yoga kshema vahamyaham, he doesn't necessarily mean I will keep your bank account full. I mean, he may, that's another thing. But what he means is I will give you whatever you need. The thing for which we want money, the reason for which we want a home, the reason for which we want a happy family, the reason for which we want good health, all these things that we want, the things that we hope we'll achieve by having them, that we will get. So when one has full confidence of that, they have peace. And when a person has peace, then they have the good qualities in all circumstances. Can you follow this line? If I am experiencing, not just intellectual is good, but if I am experiencing, I am experiencing yoga kshema vahamyaham, then I am getting everything I need from the Supreme, always, at every moment. If that is my experience, then everything that is driving my material lust is already satisfied. The need for security, for pleasure, for meaning, for peace, all those things, they're satisfied. Therefore, I am not trying to get them externally. If I'm not trying to get them externally, then I cannot feel threatened by anything external. And if I'm not threatened by anything external, then I always have these qualities. When I always have these qualities, my mind is steady. When my mind is steady, I can engage in bhakti yoga. Of course, what's interesting is these come about naturally by bhakti. We will get to that in a moment. And these qualities of peace can be described both as internal qualities and as external behaviors. So they're ways of thinking, they're ways of feeling and desiring, and they're also measurable external behaviors. You can look at someone's behaviors or your own behaviors. Now again, this is consistent. All of us, even the lowest, most criminal person has good behavior sometimes, yes? Right? There have been, terrible murderers, torturers, but they're still nice to their wife or their dog or something like that. They give to charity. It's very rare to find a person, I don't know if they even exist, who never has good qualities ever to anyone. Some big mafia boss, they're still nice to their brother. You know what I'm saying? Yes? There are these mice. They're called scorpion mice. They're called, most mice are vegetarians. Correct? These scorpion mice, guess what they eat? Scorpions. Imagine this. You can look it up when you go home. That there's a kind of mouse that eats scorpions. So you just imagine how fierce these mice are. Very, very fierce. And they will even attack other mice of their same species. They're not very pleasant creatures. But they generally mate for life, and they're very affectionate to their mate, and they're very affectionate to their young. If some owl or other hawk or something takes one of their babies, then they're crying, and the male and female, they're crying and they're hugging each other, and they're very cruel creatures, but still they have some affection. So the fact that we display some good qualities sometimes doesn't mean we have them. Again, really having them means we have them all the time. So this is, of course, the question: how do we get them? How do we get these good qualities? So this is the irony, perhaps. It's almost like circular. In order to really do bhakti yoga, in order to fix your mind on Krishna, you have to have these good qualities. But you get these good qualities by doing bhakti yoga. So where do you start? You start by trying to think of Krishna as much as you can. As you think of Krishna, your level of peace gradually rises. This is not, my dear friend, an on-off switch. It's not that either I have no good qualities or I have all good qualities. That's not a fact. Someone who's in the what we call the mode of ignorance, their level of going into fear is very low. It doesn't take much. Right? Just like there's poison ivy plants. I noticed you have poison ivy plants on your fence here. So if you just touch them, they will make you be in pain for 3 weeks. You follow? You just touch them. So there are people like this also. And some little thing, and they become very disturbed. So that's in the mode of ignorance. Mode of passion, one has more ability to tolerate. Tolerate, again, is not this tolerate. Tolerate, you're actually not disturbed. And one in the mode of goodness, they have a great ability. But even that is not 100%. So as we engage in bhakti, our internal peace, our internal lack of fear. Tolerating means it literally actually doesn't bother you. That gets greater and greater and greater. The tipping point of fear, it takes more and more and more and more disturbance to push us over the edge into our bad qualities. You follow? Everybody understands? Yes? Yes? So by performing bhakti, that happens. So we can say this comes automatically by bhakti. Prabhupada will often say, we don't develop these qualities independently. They come as part of our bhakti. So what does that mean? We can think about being vegetarian. Srila Prabhupada also says that we don't separately endeavor to be a vegetarian, but we develop vegetarianism automatically as part of our bhakti. So automatically, does this mean that we go to the shop and we don't read the labels? Oh, I'm a bhakti yogi, so I just blindfold in the store. No, we make some effort, but that effort is part of bhakti. So this is a very important point. Please try to understand this very carefully. If we try to develop good qualities separately from bhakti, what that means is that by my own effort, I am trying to move up through the modes of material nature. Now, if any of us have ever really tried to change or fix something in ourselves, and we thought we had done it, and then we found out we hadn't really done it. You see, I have some problem, and I work on it. Maybe I take a course, a seminar, maybe I read a self-help book, or something. I do something. And I think, oh, now I fixed it. I don't have that problem anymore, and something happens, and oops. I did it again. When we solve our problems in that way, my dear friends, that's indicative that we are trying to do them separately from bhakti. Because remember I talked about the tipping point in the modes is higher? If you, with effort, takes effort, because our body and mind are in a particular mode according to our past lives. If by great effort we move ourselves up from ignorance to passion, passion to goodness, we will change our qualities, but the modes are unstable, Krishna says. He says, the modes are constantly in competition, and they are unstable. And therefore, when the mode of ignorance comes along, we get pushed over. But in bhakti, it's very different. If one develops these qualities as part of bhakti, anything developed in bhakti is permanent. So why is that? It's not based on the modes of nature. The way we develop these qualities in bhakti is that we actually see, we actually perceive, we actually experience that I am separate from this body and mind, I am separate from the world. We see the material things honestly for what they are. Srila Prabhupada says we see the naked form of material desires. Remember, everything's, all these bad qualities are propelled by what again? Lust and fear, yes? But if you can see that what you're lusting over has no value, it has no value. You think, oh, I want this thing, and then you see actually, oh, it's just cardboard. You follow? And when I was about 10 years old, I visited Hollywood, and I got to go on the set of a television show that I watched a lot, and I saw that the set is just fake. You know, it looked so wonderful when you're watching it on television, but when you actually go and see it, it's all false. And on television, it looked like they were doing magic, but they showed me their tricks. And after that, I could not enjoy the show anymore. So good qualities in bhakti is exactly like that. The illusion is removed, and you see it actually. Maya means that which is not. So you, in bhakti, you see that which is. One sees the truth. And when one sees the truth, one's attraction to the illusion is finished. Now that usually happens in stages. It doesn't usually happen all of a sudden. But whatever aspect of illusion we see honestly, this is not philosophical conviction, my dear friends. I'm not talking about philosophical intellectual conviction. I am talking about experience. Philosophical intellectual conviction is still within the modes of material nature. But by bhakti, one becomes attached to Krishna, and then one sees Maya for what it is. And any good qualities attained in bhakti are permanent. But they are still attained as part of bhakti. How is that? Because we want to please Krishna. Just like if I'm going to offer some food to Krishna, I want to make sure it's vegetarian food. So what am I really offering to Krishna? Myself, yes? The main thing I'm offering to Krishna is myself. So I want to make sure that I am fit to be offered. And therefore it is part of my offering to Krishna that I want to see truth and I want to develop these qualities. All right, now we're going to look at the qualities themselves. And rather than going through the verses, because this is text 13 through 20, rather than looking at them in order like that, text 13, 14, 15, like that, I've recombined them into categories. And with each of these verses, Krishna says, one who does this is very dear to me, one who does this is very dear to me. So we've created this acronym of DEAR. And we've categorize these qualities into four types. One is detachment above duality. Another is endeavor and focus. Another is the attitude of a servant of God, which we talked about a lot the last couple days. And the last is relationship interaction. We're going to look at these briefly. Each of these could obviously, we could talk about for a week or a month. So it's going to be just brief. So the first one in DEAR is detachment above duality. And this detachment and being equipoised, unaffected, is a recurring theme in the Bhagavad Gita and in the Bhagavatam. That the main symptom of someone who is an enlightened being is this detachment and equanimity. It's important to know what are the symptoms, correct? How will you know if you are advancing in Bhakti Yoga? How will you know you are attaining enlightenment? How will you know someone else is enlightened? So these are the symptoms. And these are the lists that Krishna gives. Unaffected by happiness and distress, fear and anxiety. That means happiness, distress, fear and anxiety will come to the mind. But you see, it's not me. It's not me. Like Krishna says, rivers flowing into the ocean that's always being filled but always still. Something like you go to an electronic store, like Best Buy or something, or the electronic section of Walmart, and they're selling televisions, so they have all the televisions up. And in order to sell them, they're playing something on the television. And in one screen, somebody's happy, and another screen, somebody is distressed, another screen, somebody is in fear. Are you affected? Do you feel any effect?
No.
No, because you're not what? You're not watching it. If you were sitting and watching, you would feel. Right? If you're watching a television show, you're watching a movie, when the character becomes happy, you become happy. Otherwise, nobody would watch it. If you're watching it and just, oh, I don't care what they're doing, you know. What is the reason people are watching? They want the emotional involvement. That's the purpose. But if you're not watching, although it's there, you don't feel anything. So Krishna says, 5th chapter, 13th chapter, we are just an observer. We are not really doing anything. What is happening in this world, we are simply observing. You say, oh, it's not me. It's not happening to me. There'll be feelings of happiness, distress, fear and anxiety, joy, grief, desire, lamentation, bodily pain, bodily pleasure. But one will look at them and say, oh, that's interesting. But it's not me. Therefore, one will be unaffected. This is also nicely explained a little later on in the Bhagavad Gita when Arjuna asks what is the symptom of one who has transcended the modes of material nature. And Krishna says, one who does not desire illumination, attachment, or delusion when they appear, or long for them when they disappear. One who feels no desire, no hatred for illumination, attachment, or illusion. You don't hate them, you don't want them. Oh, just the modes. He said, knowing that the modes alone are active. Honor and dishonor. So fleeting, yes? Sometimes the people who honor us on Monday, they dishonor us on Tuesday. Or the people who dishonor us on Monday, they honor us on Tuesday. Interesting, isn't it? The friends become enemies, the enemies become friends. Everybody's talking about us, then nobody's talking about us. Everyone only says good things, then everyone only says bad things. It's very fleeting and has nothing to do with us. And Baladev Vijayabhushana writes, one who does not rejoice on gaining dear things. Oh, now I've gained, now I got exactly what I want. Or now I've gotten something I don't want. Oh, now I hate this. Does not lament on the destruction of what is dear for him. Does not hanker for what he does not have. So how can one do this? How can one give up this hankering and lamentation? Only if you know that you already have everything, my dear friends. The only way. If I already have everything, and I cannot lose anything, then whether I get something nice in the world or I lose something nice in the world, it doesn't matter. And give up both pious and sinful activities. Of course, the devotee generally acts in a way that to the world is considered pious. But we are not doing pious activities so that everybody will say, oh, what a good person you are. Or so we will go to heaven. We are doing pious activities because why are they pious? Because Krishna likes them. We are doing them to please Krishna, but we have no attachment to pious, impious activities. As Raghunath Das Goswami says, don't be doing these activities, just be trying to please God. Of course, when you try to please God, that will look like pious activities. We were talking about this the other day. Instead of trying to please your wife, you're trying to please Krishna. But of course, Krishna will be happy if you are kind to your wife. But your purpose for being kind to your wife is different. Instead of, I'm going to be kind to my wife because I am such a good husband. I'm going to be kind to my wife because it will please Krishna. So the second area is endeavor and focus. Endeavor and focus. That Krishna is our supreme goal of life. Our supreme goal of life is not, I want to become rich and famous with a big house and 5 cars and 3 flat-screen TVs and a very high status career. I have to be an engineer or a doctor. There are other careers, you know, besides engineer and doctor. But that becomes the goal. I want to find God. I want to love God. Everything else, secondary. And serving Krishna with determination in good times and bad times, in sickness and health, in wealth, in poverty, fame, infamy, heat and cold, I will always serve Krishna. Self-control, not controlled by fear, not controlled by rules, but controlled by oneself, because I want to please Krishna. I'm very expert. Sometimes people think that if one is a spiritual person, one doesn't care about being very professional in the world. But Prabhupada said the brahmachari student should learn something of everything and everything of something. And part of the way we show our love for Krishna is becoming very expert in our service. Even in this world, if I say I love you, then I learn to become expert at what pleases you. I don't say, please come to dinner at my house, and then I just, you know, throw something together, it doesn't taste good. I become expert. Not looking for a material result. Oh, this is such a challenge. Often we measure our spirituality by the external result. Or if I'm very spiritual, then, you know, I'll always be healthy, I'll always be rich. Anything I want to do for Krishna will happen. I want to sell a lot of books, I will sell many books. I want to build a big temple that will get built. No, if I want to please Krishna. You know, sometimes people please Krishna a lot, even though the external result is not there. We just think about Jatayu. Those of you who know the Ramayana, you know Jatayu? Was he successful externally or not? No, he failed completely. He was trying to keep Ravana from kidnapping Sita, and it was a complete failure. But was he spiritually successful?
Yes.
Totally. 100% spiritually successful, materially complete failure. We do not measure our spiritual success by the material result. Or even, as sometimes people think, well, if Krishna gives you an order, then it will work out right, and if it doesn't work out right, it means it wasn't Krishna's desire. Sometimes we hear devotees saying like this. I tried to do it, it didn't work, it wasn't Krishna's desire. If it worked, it's Krishna's desire. They measure Krishna's happiness by the external result. But this really doesn't make sense. Like Krishna told the coward boys, go beg from the yogic brahmanas. Were they successful?
No.
But it was Krishna's order. And Kavi Kanapur says they come to Krishna and say, how has nectar become salty? How is your infallible order not born fruit? But Krishna was very pleased. He was very pleased with the coward boys. So the devotee is not attached to the material result. The devotee is attached to pleasing Krishna without any cares. Again, without anxieties. My concern is to make Krishna happy. But I don't have anxieties for the world, and to fix one's mind and intelligence on the Lord. The third one is the attitude of a servant. And we talked about this the last couple days. This is the secret agent principle. So the secret agent, they go to the foreign country, but not openly as a spy. The American spies in Russia, they don't go through the immigration. So why are you in our country? Oh, I'm here to spy. And they appear to be something else. They appear to be a tourist. They appear to be a diplomat. They appear to be a car salesman. Yeah? So the devotee, they're taking care of their house, but it's not their house. They're not taking care of their house for their comfort. They're taking care of their house because it's Krishna's house. They're taking care of their family because their family members are part of Krishna. It's their service. And one will do a better job. Because when we're doing it for ourselves, when it doesn't work out right, we become discouraged. Correct? Right? So you mow your lawn, you fix the broken door, you fix the washing machine, and you come in the house and your wife says, "Have you done the shopping yet?" And then the man says, "Why bother? You don't even notice anything I do anyway." When we're working for ourselves, as soon as we don't get the reciprocation we want or expect from the other people in our life, then our determination is finished. We only behave properly conditionally. But when I am trying to please Krishna, I am getting that reciprocation from Krishna. And then if my wife appreciates or does not appreciate, my determination is still there. Wouldn't that be nice not to be dependent on the behavior of other people for our happiness? Wouldn't that be nice to have our own happiness within? So Krishna says, not attached to any residence. One is not thinking this is my house for my enjoyment. Then I am the doer. Ahankara vimuta makarta hamiti manute. One does not think I am the doer. I am just a servant. I am Krishna's servant. I am doing this for Krishna's pleasure. And whatever Krishna does, that is good. Krishna gives me nice food, that is good. Krishna gives me not nice food, that is good. Krishna gives me lots of money, that is good. Krishna puts me in poverty, that is good. Krishna gives me a wonderful house, that is good. Krishna gives me a falling apart house, that is good. This is the way we want our children to see us, correct? So sometimes in the day you give your children toys, and other times in the day you take those same toys away, yes? That is correct? And both you are doing for the good of your children. Both things. The child may not see it like that. The child might think, oh, when it is playtime, my parents are nice. When it is time to put the toys away, my parents are not nice. But actually, both is nice. When you give your children dessert, that is nice. When you take them to the doctor, that is also nice. But the children may not see like that. So we should see like that with Krishna. Everything he does is good. He gives, that is good. He takes away, that is good. Therefore, the devotee is satisfied with whatever comes without extra endeavor. One does an honest livelihood, 8 hours a day maximum, according to one's propensity, and whatever one gets, that is fine. Not that I have to be the doer and I have to work so hard. You can't do it anyway. Okay, the last one is relationships. Love, mercy, respect, and freedom. To love one's enemies. Right? Everyone can love one's friends. That's not difficult. And Krishna says, those who are equal to friends, enemies, and neutral, such a person is very dear to them. We talked about this a little bit the other day. That one should think in what way about one's enemies? May they what? Anybody remember? May they be happy. May they learn through... Where's that gentleman? Did he stay home today? Is he there? That man who said that if he stayed home, he had no problems. Did he stay home? He stayed home. So one's attitude towards one's enemy should be, may they learn in a joyful way. May they always have joy. Generally, we wish joy on our friends and suffering to our enemies. We wish joy to everyone. If we wish suffering to others, guess what? It comes back and we will suffer. Even those who are hurting us, those who are cruel, may they learn their lessons in a joyful way. May everything come to them in a joyful way. May they not have to suffer. And one doesn't blame the enemy. One thinks that this enemy is just the agent of my own karma. Because you know what? That is the truth. That is the truth. Otherwise, that person would be more powerful than God. So whatever I am destined to get, that's what I'm going to get. And a person may give it to me, but I'm getting what I'm destined to get. And in our family relations, again, the secret agent principle. I am not thinking this is my wife. This is my wife, and her duty is to please me. And if she's not pleasing me, I become unhappy. No. Her duty is to please Krishna. And my duty is to please Krishna. I should help her please Krishna. And I should also, she should help me please Krishna. That this is mine. My husband, my children, my parents, my friends, for my pleasure. As if I am the center of the universe and everyone is existing to please me. If we think about it logically, it's absurd. Yes? Since when have any of you ever been the center of the universe? It's so silly. Everybody is meant to please Krishna. And it is Krishna who is satisfying us. Not our wife, not our husband, not our children, not our parents, not our employer. They don't have the capacity. Just like the battery in your phone, it doesn't have the capacity to light this building. Now, your husband, your wife, your children, your mother, your father, your friends, everybody, your employer, your government, they don't have the capacity to fulfill you. Nor do you have the capacity to fulfill them. So I take care of them to please Krishna. And we take care of our relatives in this way. Oh, one of the most difficult instructions in this section. He for whom no one is put into difficulty. Do not cause anxiety to anyone. Very difficult. This means again that we are understanding that Krishna is meeting all of my needs. Why do we put others into difficulty? Because we think, I have to have this person do something for me. And if they won't do it voluntarily, I need to put them into anxiety. But we don't depend, Krishna says earlier, we don't depend on any other living being. We are only dependent on the Supreme. And who is not disturbed by anyone. No matter how others treat the devotee is not disturbed. I am already getting everything I need from Krishna. I am a spiritual being, I am connected to the divine, and my complete needs are always taken care of. Therefore, whether I get or don't get externally, it doesn't matter. And Krishna says, without cares. Prabhupada explains this, without cares means we don't join a group. You say, well, we are members of a group. But we are members of a group, not like a football team. Please don't be a member of the Hare Krishna movement, ISKCON, like it's a football team. Our team is better than your team, and we are right, and you are wrong. Please don't do this. And that's not the purpose of joining the Hare Krishna movement, is not to get some new sectarian designation. That's not the purpose. The purpose of joining the Hare Krishna movement is to get rid of all the sectarian designations. Sarvapati Vinir Mutantai Pratyanamara Shikesh Rishikesh Musaidana Bhakti Yukshita. We are joining this ISKCON movement to become free from designations. So don't say, this is not, we're not creating a faction in the world. We're not saying, oh, we're better than the Christians, we're better than the Muslims, we're better than the other Vaishnavas. I mean, this is very beginning spiritualist things like this. God is only in my temple. And neutral, not taking sides. So this is the nectarian path of the good qualities. Dharma Amritam in verse 20. When we have these good qualities, one will feel as if there's this golden, effulgent nectar. Nectar, Amritam. Ritam means death. Amritam, without death. As if there's this deathless, golden light of nectar that's pouring over your whole life. And you will feel your whole life is surrounded by golden effulgence of deathlessness and freedom. And one who has these qualities is very dear to Krishna. Krishna says, for each of these qualities, such a person is very dear to me, such a person is very dear to me. Detachment above duality, endeavor and focus, the attitude of a servant, and proper relationship with others. Now, because these qualities have arisen from bhakti, they're not material qualities. Material qualities are gained through our own effort of going through the modes. That doesn't impress Krishna, because those are unstable. And they're not deep, they're not authentic. But when these qualities come from a desire to please Krishna and from a connection with Krishna, Krishna is very happy. Why do they make Krishna happy? Because they make us genuinely happy, and Krishna is happy at our happiness. Krishna is happy at our real happiness. Krishna is not happy at our illusory happiness. Just like no parent would be happy if their children become happy by being a heroin addict, right? If your child becomes a heroin addict and they say, oh, I am very happy. That's not happiness. But Krishna is not interested in our being happy in an illusion. He wants us to be genuinely happy. When we are genuinely happy, Krishna is very happy. And this kind of happiness in bhakti controls Krishna. Everybody wants to control God. Even the atheists, they're trying to control God's nature. But most religious people, they are trying to control God. They go to their temple, their church, their mosque, their synagogue, and they say, okay, God, here's what I want you to do. And if God doesn't do it the way they want, when they want, oh, now I don't believe in you anymore. Why should I worship you? As if they're paying him, you know? You put $10 in the donation box. Okay, now I have to pass my exam. And my mother has to become healthy. And I have to get a good husband. Okay, I paid you the $10 now. Glory, glory, glory to you. Here's my list. So this is... Even we're not going to be controlled like that. Yes? Someone tries to control you like that, would it work? No. What to speak of God? He's not impressed. That's not the relationship he wants to have. But when we have these good qualities from love, then Krishna comes under the control of such a devotee. Prabhupada said the devotee then holds Krishna in the palm of their hand. Why? Because Krishna knows you're not going to exploit me. We are also like this. If I know somebody loves me and they're not going to exploit me, then I'm happy to do whatever they want. Correct? But if someone's trying to exploit me, I don't want to do anything for them. So when Krishna knows that we love him and we trust him, and he knows he can trust us, then anything we want, Krishna will give. Anything. anything. The spiritual world. Chintamani Prakrasad Mashu Kalpa Virchala Chapitation Sura Bhira Nipalanta Lakshmi Sasvasata Samram Saviman. It's full of wish fulfilling trees. The dust is wish fulfilling. Anything anyone wants is immediately there. Krishna gives the liberation of Sharsti, where he gives equal opulences. Swarupya, equal beauty. Krishna has no envy. We don't want others to have equal to us, huh? I mean, our neighbors can have a nice house, but not as nice as ours. Ours has to be a little nicer, yes. They can have a beautiful wife, but ours has to be a little bit more beautiful. You know, they say the people who get second place in the Olympics, they get depressed. But Krishna's not like that. Krishna shares everything equally with the jivas who are not exploited to him. So when we develop these qualities, then Krishna comes under our control. But the devotees, they say, no, I don't want anything. I'm just happy to serve you. Very wonderful. I would suggest, again, this is very deep. We have just touched the surface. I would suggest, if you do not already have Srila Prabhupada's translation of Bhagavad Gita. We have Bhagavad Gita's on the table for sale, yes? Oh, very good. I was in one temple where I said, you get a Bhagavad Gita? They said, oh, we don't have any. So if you want to get into this in more depth, we have our Bhagavad Gita's there. Srila Prabhupada has a wonderful translation and commentary, and you can go into more depth. So I think we have to stop here, correct? Yes? Time is over? Do we have time for questions or we have to stop? It's already 6:38. We started a little late. What should we do? I can't, the fan is so loud. I can't hear you. One or two. Okay. You're number one. You're going to have to scream, I think. Unless there's a mic. Is there a mic? Hare Krishna. So no, the fan's fine as long as we have a mic. You don't have to turn it off.
Last night, you in your lecture were talking about, or telling a story about a devotee you knew who had a restaurant, and the restaurant wasn't doing well, and they
yes.
felt that they should endeavor harder in order to make it successful, and it was not a smart decision. And then in the lecture that you gave just now, you spoke about not measuring our advancement in spiritual advancement by the fruitive result of our actions.
Yes.
So how do, and you also specifically said that we shouldn't say, oh, this is Krishna's will or this is Krishna's not Krishna's will based on the fruitive result.
Correct.
So how do we rectify those two situations?
Okay, well, the first situation we talked about yesterday, what is an obstacle, what is a test? So this gentleman was having difficulty in his restaurant, and the only way he could find to solve the problem was by hiring a meat-eating cook. So better to close the restaurant than to hire a meat-eating cook, is the point. So if your only way to get through a problem in life is to do something that's illegal, immoral, unethical, or harmful spiritually, then you take the difficulty in life as a means, okay, now I have to do something else. That was my example. Because people often ask, when I have a difficulty in life, do I have to conquer it by any means? Is that clear? So if there's some obstacle in my spiritual life, my spiritual service, do I try to destroy the obstacle, or do I try to get the lesson from the obstacle? So when do I try to destroy the obstacle? When I can destroy it, and when my destruction of it doesn't produce an equal or greater harm. So I was giving that as an example of that the only way he could destroy that obstacle was to have an equal or greater harm than the obstacle itself. And then the second thing is, what are you asking specifically? How do I get rid of this idea of measuring Krishna's happiness by the external result?
Well, if your ability to overcome the obstacle, the indication of Krishna's will.
No.
Well, I'm trying to understand these.
Your ability to respond properly to the obstacle is an indication of Krishna's will. An indication of your peace in Krishna. Your ability to meet the difficulties in life appropriately.
So the circumstances are almost arbitrary. It's all about your ability, your consciousness.
Actually, yes.
Okay.
Actually, yes. The external, you have to remember, this world is, it's illusory. It's not illusory in the sense of not existing, but it's illusory in the sense that it's not what it appears to be. It appears to be something very substantial and meaningful in and of itself, but it's not. It has meaning only insofar as it's related to Krishna. So thinking things have meaning and value in and of themselves is an illusion. There's one quote, I wish I had it memorized, I'm sorry, where Prabhupada talks about even the external things we do in bhakti. He says they're not really very important in and of themselves, but they're simply a platform by which we can apply the principles in a practical way. He said, don't, you know, work so hard for doing this or that externally. He says, if you can just, you know, have one nice interaction with a person in a day about Krishna, that is wonderful. So you know, we tend to think about bigger, better, more external. That's not actually a fact. Does that make some sense to you?
Yeah, that's a big revelation. Thank you.
Okay. And once you think like that, you become free. You become liberated. Once your happiness, your sense of worth, your sense of self, of value, of meaning, is no longer tied to external. And external includes the body and the mind. Once your sense of happiness and peace and adventure and meaning and worth are only tied to the real self and the real self's relationship to Krishna, then what does Krishna say in the sixth chapter? Then one is not shaken even in the midst of the greatest difficulty. He says, this indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. He says, the state of perfection is to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. So that is what we are aiming for. Of course, we try to do things externally for Krishna's mission, but whether they are successful or not is not in our hands, whether they are externally successful or not. And if we are connecting with Krishna and Guru at every moment, that is a success. That is a success. Everything externally ultimately is going to be a failure. I'm sorry. But it will be. Nothing in this world is going to last. It will all fail. Even we talk about that Mahaprabhu's movement will go on for 10,000 years. But 10,000 years is not eternally. That means at some point this movement will fail. Correct? Is that correct? No, it will. Everybody understand that? You build a big building for Krishna. Will it last forever? At some point it will fail. Whether it fails in your lifetime and you see it fail, or still it will fail. Everything. So if we're going to measure our sense of self, our value, our worth, our success, our happiness, by those things, we will always be in anxiety and we will always be disappointed. And then we become the slave of the moving and pushing of the modes of nature. It's all right? What's interesting is when you're like that, you'll actually work harder for what appears to be something external. Isn't that fascinating? Because you're enlivened at every moment. Whether it's a success or failure is irrelevant. Yes? Do we have the microphone over here, please? I was told I can only have two questions, so this is it. Has to be on now. Is there a switch?
Thank you, Mataji, for my wonderful lecture. My question is like, there is like for the way we treat enemies is like when something happens which is inimical, I read beautiful and like it's better to suffer than to protest. So my question is like, if somebody especially we love, if they insult us or if they tell anything out of anger, at one side I know that I should help them, that they shouldn't behave like that in a consistent way, and on the other side I should remain steady. So what should be my reaction when
okay, so if somebody that I love, of course those the main people who hurt us regularly are the people that we love for many reasons. It depends who it is. So if it's your children, you have a duty to instruct them. That is your duty. That is your service to Krishna. If it's somebody that you are in charge of, that you are supposed to instruct, and that person insults you and hurts you, you must instruct them. That is your duty. If you're the parent, you're the teacher, you're the employer, you're the guru, you must instruct. Failure to do so is a failure of your duty. You're not supposed to be instructing them so that they'll treat you very nicely and you'll be happy in the world because your children are so obedient. I have such obedient children. I am so happy in the world. But because it will please Krishna. Okay, if the person who loves you and insults you is not your subordinate, it depends what is your relationship with them. But your key principle is, how can Krishna be happy? How can Krishna be happy? How can I deal with this person so Krishna will be happy? And part of that is also we have to protect ourselves. So Prabhupada says, highest principle is to save others, and higher than that is to save yourself. Like in the airplane, you have to put on your oxygen mask first. You know? So if you're in a situation where it's actually dangerous to you, you know, somebody's beating you or something, it's not that you just stand there and let them beat you. You follow? Go to the proper authorities or whatever. But not out of hatred for the person. Not with any inimical feeling toward the person. And it's good to learn, you can learn some ordinary technique how to express something to a person in a way that is respectful and beneficial. That's beyond the scope of our discussion now. But there's ways one can learn. So you're not attacking the other person. You don't go to the other, you're a terrible person, how dare you, you know, but you can, you know, listen, I need some proper communication in my life. I need some considerate dealings, you know, I'm also a human being, please deal with me in a way that's, but if they won't, you know, what do you do? Then you have to get your needs met from Krishna. We will not be able to get everyone in this world to treat us nicely all the time, my dear friends, it will not happen. Good luck. You don't really good luck. Even people who love you, they'll not treat you nicely all the time. It's not going to happen. If you put all your energy into that, you'll just become frustrated. If it's something very serious, then you know you have to preserve your own sanity. But for ordinary things, you can say to them, listen, when you talk to me like that, I really feel hurt. It's really painful for me. You know, would you please do like this? But it's up to them. They're free-willed entities. And ultimately you say, Krishna, you please take care of me. You're meeting all my needs. Yoga kshema baham yaham. If my mother-in-law, my sister, whatever, doesn't respect me, let me get my satisfaction from my dealings with you. So you're going to have a little mantra when this happens. Yoga kshema baham yaham. It's a very nice mantra. When other people in the world mistreat us, yoga kshema baham yaham. If you don't like Sanskrit, you can just say, Krishna's meeting all of my needs in his own wonderful way all the time. Now, when people in the world mistreat us, people in the world will mistreat us, correct? If you chant Hare Krishna, it doesn't mean nobody will ever mistreat you. Please don't think like this. Don't think if I chant Hare Krishna, become a pure devotee, that I'll always be rich, I'll always be healthy, everybody will always be wonderful to me, I'll become God. It's not going to happen. I'm sorry. If you've come here for that, you need to go someplace else because it's not what's offered. But if you become Krishna conscious, you'll be free. You won't be affected. Your happiness will not be dependent on that. You'll be getting your happiness from another source. That's what you want to do. You want to have your relationship with others be on the platform of freedom. I am not relating with you to meet my needs. My needs are already met. I am relating with you simply because I want to, or as my service to Krishna on the platform of freedom, the voluntary freedom, not on the platform of need. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada.